From the West Australian, I'm Ben O'Shea, and this is The West Live.
The West Live.
The West Live
with Ben O'Shea.
It's easy to look at what happened in Sydney on Saturday when thousands of people protested the COVID lockdown and think it is only a New South Wales problem. To be fair, a lot of the police horse punching buffoonery that we saw is not only specific to Sydney, it's a direct result of how Gladys Berejiklian has bungled the virus outbreak. Victoria, meanwhile, already seems to have their outbreak under control, while Sydney's failure to lock down the city is seeing hundreds of new cases a day and, tragically, the death of a healthy 38-year-old woman. Over the weekend, Adriana Takara became the youngest female victim of COVID in Australia after she was first diagnosed with the Delta strain just over 10 days ago. So Mark McGowan was spot on when he called out the Sydney protesters on the weekend. Here's what he said.
Pack of drongos. Idiots. Morons. Absolute cretins. And I could use worse language than that.
But it would be a massive mistake to think we don't have a similar element right here in WA. A colleague of mine spotted a dual cab ute driving around Perth over the weekend that was covered in homemade anti-vaxxer signage. The fact is, this sort of sentiment is alive and well, and social media allows it to flourish and helps like-minded people organise themselves into action groups. From there, well, it's easy to see how Sydney's lockdown riot happened. But we also can't ignore the influence of right-wing media commentators on TV and radio, or as Premier McGowan calls them, East Coast nut jobs. They've been fanning the flames of COVID discontent in Sydney for months. And here's a thought, why not fine some of these idiots for spreading fake information in the same way we did Lorna Jane? The activewear brand copped a $5 million fine last week for suggesting its clothes could protect against COVID. That's not nearly as dangerous to public health as what these shock jocks are spouting. Yes, there's a free speech issue, I get that, but how many more Adriana Takaras are we willing to lose to this sort of stupidity? Coming up on the show, why the teachers' union want a cut of Mark McGowan's $5 billion surplus, and we'll cross live to Tokyo to get the latest on a big opening weekend of the Olympics. But first, let's see what's making news.
The West Live. Making news.
Joining me now is Sunrise correspondent Matt Tenney. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, mate.
Did you spend your weekend watching the Olympics?
I watched a lot of the Olympics. I introduced Flo to the Olympics. She really enjoyed the opening ceremony. In fact, treated it like a Wiggles DVD. I don't know even why am I saying DVD? Like, nobody has DVDs these days. Showing my age. But she was doing all the
tap dancing.
Yeah, and the arms going. She was just transfixed, which I'm glad about, because as a kid, I was obsessed with the Olympics. The first one I remember was Barcelona 1992, which was the arrow. Is it okay for me to say this, that compared to the arrow, the Tokyo lighting of the flame and Sydney, it was a bit like...
It's a bit underwhelming.
Rudimentary,
yeah, like
it?
I could have thought that, if you're going to get Naomi Osaka to do it, have a smashing a flaming tennis ball into a cauldron.
Yes. Exactly. The most exciting thing that happened was she moved her braid out of the way just before she left.
I was worried it was going to catch on fire. Yeah. But I will say, though, the cauldron opening up and being mirrored in the inside, beautiful cauldron.
Look, it was beautiful. Stunning. It just, I think that they needed to go for something a little trickier.
Yeah.
I think the tennis ball, the flaming tennis ball being served into the cauldron.
Well,
it's not like it would have hit anyone in the back anyway, because nobody was there.
Yeah, exactly.
It could have just kept on going.
There's no consequences for a miss.
No.
Now, I know we follow each other on Instagram. Did you see the thing that I posted yesterday?
The mask?
Mask is one thing, but the robot? Do you see that one?
Oh, yes, but I didn't watch it. I saw it. Sorry.
So
please
this,
fill me
in. It wasn't covered in the telecast very exhaustively, which is a shame. So Toyota is apparently...
Do we have to put a complaint into a certain channel for
that? Maybe. If we only knew somebody who we could talk to. So Toyota has built this human-sized robot, humanoid robot that's about 6 foot tall. It's terrifying. And it walked out in the half-time between the Dream Team and France last night. And it's walked over to a rack of basketballs, has picked up a ball from the free throw line, has just... got it in, first go, and then the cameras cut away from it. But you could see in the distance, in the background, as they were showing other bits of the stadium, it has picked up a ball, walked to the halfway line, and drilled it, first go.
Are you saying we're going to have a robot Olympics? Like all the athletes are going to be put out of a job eventually?
All I'm saying is like Paris 2024, the Japanese team.
Just a team bleep, of robots. Bloop. Boop, 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 boop. Halfway
three-pointer.
Line.
Boom. Take that, LeBron.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, so just with my words, Japan for gold in the basketball.
This just reminds me, speaking of Japanese culture and technology, the pictograms thing in the opening ceremony. Did you see that? I mean, I thought it was
that.
Perhaps somebody on Twitter commented, "Now's your time to go and get a cup of tea." but I had no idea that that started in Tokyo.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think it could have been explained a bit better that it started in Tokyo at the last Olympics. Like, Japan invented those pictograms. And also, the people performing it were two of Japan's most famous, beloved comedians.
One dropped the tennis racket.
Yeah,
was
I know.
That part of the act.
No.
Don't mention the war.
Yeah. So yeah, there was lots of things. And did you know that the music that was played in the opening ceremony was actually the scores of the most famous computer games?
Yes,
like Final Fantasy,
only,
things like that.
I only totally got across that yesterday when I saw a
So it's subtle. I think there was some subtleties to the opening ceremony that we didn't appreciate at the time.
I just felt sorry for them that it didn't have. Yeah. The crowd atmosphere and
it would
all
have
that
been,
sort of
it would
thing.
Have been very different. If it wasn't for COVID, I'm sure it would have been like a huge spectacular with heaps of people, choreographed dancing. It was scaled back a lot.
I think so. But I think the message of it all is really important that, you know, the human spirit endures.
And
you know, I think history will see this as the world going, hang on, we can do this.
Let's
get it done.
Exactly.
Know?
And let's hope that's what comes out of it. And now, can WA get it done when it comes to keeping COVID ships out of
this has become our Olympic sport, hasn't it?
I know, right?
So we have another cargo ship off the coast of WA with four sailors on this one of 20 reporting COVID symptoms. So it's heading towards Fremantle. At this stage, it doesn't have permission to enter the harbour. We know that one person on board is quite ill. So we're likely to see a similar situation as the BBC California. That ship, there's eight people with COVID, active COVID on board, two of them are no longer infectious. So the plan for that ship is for them to basically be neutralised and then it can go on its way.
Do we have any idea what the name of this ship is?
We do. It's the Darya Krishna.
The Darya Krishna. Okay, that's
Darya
interesting.
Darya Krishna.
There you go.
Not Hare Krishna, Darya Krishna.
Darya Krishna, that's pretty good. Similar. Not as good as the BBC California.
No, that's a good one, isn't
it? Yeah, that's been one of the best.
Yeah, so... we'll find out more about this today. You know, the Premier is always with these situations saying, I just want the ship to sail away. But in reality, if there are really sick people on board, we can't just let them die. So,
no, we've got to look after them. Yeah. And 4 out of 20 have COVID symptoms. I suspect it's probably going to be more than that
by the time they dock.
Yeah. Well, let's do the wrap of COVID figures around the nation.
What's happening? So Sydney, two more people have died from COVID as their outbreak worsened. So 38 old Brazilian national had no pre-existing conditions. So lost her fight to the disease, and a woman in her 70s is the second victim. So really the situation there is dire. There have been some figures and talk that they could be in lockdown till mid-September. I mean, the way things are going, you wouldn't be surprised if it has to be longer than that, to be honest, I would have thought. I mean, I'm not factoring in being able to go there till Christmas time, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's pretty hectic over there at the moment, and just still such a huge number of people who've been infectious in the community.
And look at the protests. Yeah. Imagine if someone with COVID who was a super spreader was at those protests.
Yeah,
and then they all go back to the suburbs of Sydney. I mean, this is just a disaster waiting to happen. And I mean, I know Gladys Berejiklian is saying, you know, if we had a crystal ball, of course, but we don't know the alternative to this. But I feel like they kind of did know the alternative to this, because states like WA that have been very quick to crush and kill the virus have done it in a way where you do a 3 or 4 day lockdown and it's done. They could have done that and avoided this long lockdown.
Which is what
lockdown.
Victoria has done.
Well, they changed the way they operate, didn't they? When we look at their 100 plus day lockdown of last year versus what they've done this time around, which was essentially the WA approach, and it's working.
Yep.
So I think in Victoria,
their
11 community cases in the past 24 hours, what we're seeing is often these are all in isolation.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, the 11 that they announced today were all in isolation, which is such a massive difference in terms of the future trajectory of the outbreak. And so now, you know, Dan Andrews is talking seriously about when the lockdown can be eased, probably sooner sooner rather than later, because they know everybody who's tested positive, they know where they've been, who they've had contact with. It gives them confidence that they're on top of the spread.
And the same situation in South Australia. They had three, all of them in isolation as well.
Yeah.
They're very different situation. And I imagine they're going to have to just keep their border... They are going to have to keep their border closed to New South Wales until the situation gets under control, because the reality is, in regular life, people travel between New South Wales and Victoria
all the time.
As if we're travelling on the train from Perth to Mandurah.
Yep, and same with Queensland. Queensland's on alert after someone from New South Wales snuck across the border. So it's the issue in New South Wales doesn't just affect New South Wales. It affects Victoria, affects Queensland. And
we're so lucky we're so isolated.
Yeah, that's exactly.
In this situation.
It's
finally, there's a benefit. Also, we're totally in the right time zone for the Olympics, which is another benefit of being in Perth.
Yep. Everything's coming up Western Australia. Although we do have now some new ways to get fines on the roads.
So cameras, which can automatically detect Perth drivers using their mobiles, are about to be installed on the Smart Freeway. So that's the Kwinana between Canning Highway and the Narrows. There's going to be a trial, 12-month trial, starting in September. And during that time, the system will only be used, we're told, to capture drivers who are speeding and motorists who ignore lane closures. But these cameras do have the potential to capture Perth drivers who are on their mobile phones. Main Roads are saying, look, that's not part of this trial.
Yeah, right.
What about the next trial, though?
Exactly. Look, it's just like the Safe WA app. We're looking to harvest that data and use it in criminal investigations.
Next minute.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one, because I think, you know, mobile phone use is such a big issue on the safety on the roads. Inattention causes accidents all the time.
I think it did improve, though, when they brought in the $1,000 fine. And, you know, the no touching. And I think a lot more people have the crazy or the magnetic devices now. So I think things you're seeing a lot less.
Yeah, I think there's been behavioural change.
Yeah.
The seatbelt one's an interesting one because these cameras apparently can also detect drivers who aren't wearing seatbelts.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, who is not wearing a seatbelt these days?
I don't understand who doesn't wear a seatbelt.
Because most cars surely beep. Like, it's really annoying.
Yeah, if you don't have the seatbelt on.
By the end of the driveway, it's already beeping if you don't have your seatbelt on.
For our generation as well, it's automatic, because we've known no different. I mean, I know older people will have been driving in the period when there weren't
seatbelts. There were seatbelts, exactly.
But for us, it's so...
Yeah, it's so
you
ingrained.
You don't even think.
Well, I saw when I was away out of Perth weekend before last, there was, you know, those signs, local police are now targeting, and I saw one that said, local police are now targeting seatbelts, and it's like, that seems like a waste of time.
Yeah, it's kind of like they're, you know, they're still on MySpace instead of TikTok.
Exactly. Local police are now updating their MySpace profiles while they're waiting for someone to not wear seatbelts.
Local police are changing the name of their Hotmail address, you know, like, come on.
Oh, Matt Tinney, thanks for ending it on a high. We're going to talk to you tomorrow on the West
Live. One day this week on a high. We'll see if we can get any more.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
We'll do. Cheers, mate.
You're listening to the West Live.
How nice was it to get some sunshine over the weekend? Well, I hope you didn't get too attached to the fine weather, because the forecast for the Savo ain't looking good. Joining me now is duty forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology, Bob Tarr. Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, good morning.
And so the BOM has issued a severe weather warning for this afternoon. What can we expect?
So there's going to be a strong cold front moving into the southwest corner of the state later today. Across the metro area, we are going to see rain increasing from about midday, and especially around the metro from most likely late afternoon into the early part of the evening. There's going to be a period of probably some pretty intense rainfall, not necessarily as heavy as we saw on that one Friday, which was a very rare event, but it could be somewhat similar to that, and there probably will be some issues with flash flooding along that leading edge of the front, and also there is some risk of damaging winds along that leading edge, potentially a slight chance of destructive winds, which would be in excess of 125 kilometers an hour, although those are probably a little bit more likely down across the southwest corner from south of a line from about Bunbury to Bremer Bay. Then once that passes through, there might be a little bit of a lull, but then the cold pool behind the cold front will come in starting across the southwest capes this evening and then extending throughout the southwest land division later on. And we will see some strong winds again within that and the risk of damaging winds throughout much of the southwest land division.
And now the forecast suggests that those damaging winds could be coming in from around 5 o'clock this afternoon. That's about peak hour when people are heading home along the freeway. Would you reckon it might be a good idea for people to get out of work a bit earlier if they could?
Yeah, so that's also probably when about the heaviest rainfall is going to be coming through, especially some areas south of the city. Southern suburbs might be starting around 3 or 4 o'clock, and then around the city would be probably from about 5 to 7 o'clock. So, with a quite intense rainfall, it could lead to some issues on the roadway. So, if you have an opportunity to leave early, today's probably a good day to do it.
Mm. And then how long will this weather hang around for?
So during the overnight period, we'll still see that risk of severe weather and continuing probably into tomorrow morning. Then the conditions should be easing off, still remaining a bit showery into tomorrow afternoon, but conditions should be easing off by about midday tomorrow.
Mm. A duty forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology, Bob Tarr, thanks for being on the West Live this morning.
Sure, no worries.
There's a dispute brewing between the state government and WA's teachers, and it's not over COVID. The issue is wages. Joining me now is the State School Teachers Union WA President, Pat Byrne. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, Ben. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, what's behind this campaign that's been launched today?
Well, 4 years of a wages cap of $1,000, I think, is what's behind it. Teachers reluctantly accepted, I think, along all other public sector workers in Western Australia, that there was a need for that 4 years ago. Now, of course, the government has flagged that they intend to continue that policy for another 2 years. What we're saying is that long-term suppression of wages has consequences beyond the immediate issue of pay. And in teaching, we're seeing that in the terms of teacher shortages, which are arising. We have acute problems in regional areas and in specific secondary subject areas. The other part of that is that there's been a significant reduction in the number of entrants going into teaching. So 60% fall last year in the number of people going into postgraduate teaching qualifications for secondary teaching. This is going to have a major long-term impact on the profession.
Mm. And so what sort of wage increase are teachers fighting for?
Well, at the moment we have a ballot out to our members seeking approval for our log of claims, and we have put in there a 4% pay rise. We believe that given 4 years of percentage pay rises between 1% and 0.5% for our members, that 4% is not unreasonable in the circumstances.
And so when it comes to convincing politicians to do anything, having the public on your side is pretty important. So do you think the general public will be supportive of a wage increase? Obviously, we know the mining sector is doing well, but there's plenty of other sectors not doing so well, such as the health system at the moment. Do you think the people of WA will be behind teachers in their push to get more money?
Well, I would hope so, because of the consequences across the board. I understand completely what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying. The health sector is in desperate need, as is the whole public sector, because we've all been subjected to this $1,000 policy. The consequences, though, of continuing with that is that the policy itself actually contributes to the skills shortages across the board, which is something that the government is desperate to address. And it seems to me that the longer term view has to be about attraction and retention, and not just consideration of the immediate percentage figure.
Mm. And I guess starting the negotiations with the government over potential pay rise, are you going to point out the fact that teachers were considered really essential workers during COVID lockdown? They're the ones who still had to rock up and keep the kids in the schools?
Absolutely, as were most public sector workers. People feel like they bore the brunt over that period and will likely be expected to continue to bear the brunt. So in that context, our request, we believe, is perfectly reasonable. We need a longer-term view that understands the consequences of not providing proper wage increases. until public sector workers get proper wage increases, it's unlikely that some workers in the private sector will get wages, because there is there's a connection between the two.
Mm. And so if less teachers are going through uni, so downstream there's going to be less teachers in the system, you talk about a skills shortage, do you think there'll be an impact on the education that we're giving West Aussie kids a few years from now?
There's no question that there'll be an effect, and that will be through larger class sizes. It will be in the secondary context, not adequately trained teachers for particular subject areas, and that's going to mean ad hoc arrangements needing to be put in place to deal with that situation. That's not good for any of us.
And so what happens now? You've put a note out to your members to ask them what they think. Where do the negotiations go from here? It's early days, obviously, but can you see it escalating if the state government don't come to the party?
Well, it's always possible that that's the case. We would hope that the state government understands the argument and makes those links across the board. There are teacher shortages across Australia. It is not unreasonable to assume that Western Australian teachers will go to the east for work if, in fact, they don't get any satisfaction through this process. Now, we start bargaining in September. We may or may not be finished by the beginning of next year. It's a long time still, but we'd be hoping that we can persuade the government of the importance of our argument.
Well, let's talk very quickly about what is happening around Australia. We know there's COVID outbreaks happening pretty much everywhere except for here in Western Australia. And we heard last week that principals were being urged to get ready for remote learning should the COVID outbreak we're seeing around the nation creep across the WA border. What are you hearing from teachers? Are they confident and prepared in that scenario?
Well, I think what schools were being asked to do was to make sure that there was a plan in place. I think the department is assuring itself in that process that schools are ready to move to online learning if the case arises.
State School Teachers Union WA President Pat Byrne, thanks for your time. We'll be watching this unfold very closely over the coming months, because we know what a great job our teachers do.
Thanks, Ben.
It's been an extraordinary start for Australia to an extraordinary Games. Making its Olympic debut is surfing. And at the competition at Surigasaki Beach is our very own Channel 7 reporter, Rob Scott. Good morning, mate.
G'day, Ben.
Now, we're hearing so much about the weather over there. Just how hot is it?
Well, it's not so much the heat, it's the humidity, which is the real killer. I mean, yesterday was around 32 degrees, so by Perth standard, not too bad, but it was around 85% humidity. Today, not as bad. It's 30 degrees a maximum today, 59% humidity, but still pretty sticky and uncomfortable when you're watching the surfing. Not too bad for the surfers when they get in the water, though.
Well, let's talk about the surfing. You're out there today. Over the weekend, the conditions were probably a little bit smaller than we're used to seeing at Margaret River, but there's a typhoon on the way. What's the outlook for the competition?
Yeah, you're right. Over the past couple of days before competition kicked off yesterday, the swell was small, less than a metre. It got a bit better yesterday, around 1.5 metres. Today, it's supposed to double in size, up to almost 4 metres by this evening. So better wave heights, but still very choppy conditions out there. All this thanks to that typhoon Nepartak, which is brewing off the southeast coast here in Japan. So conditions probably going to favour our Aussie surfers a bit more than the locals. They're obviously used to surfing bigger waves.
Mm. When we hear the word typhoon, it sounds pretty scary. Are the organisers of the Olympics worried about this particular storm?
Not a single mention of it down here at the surfing, other than from our competitors saying they hope it comes, because the small waves were really, really hard to surf the last couple of days. So I know it's caused some issues up in Tokyo, where the rowing has been disrupted, but competition's going ahead as planned here at the moment.
Yeah, right. And so Aussie Olympic hopeful and seven-time world champion Aussie Stephanie Gilmore has crashed out of the surfing competition. How's the mood amongst the Aussie surfers?
Well, look, that was a big upset, really. Steph, as you said, seven-time world champ, real gold medal chance, one of our massive hopefuls at this debut for surfing. But yeah, she crashed out, beaten by South Africa's Bianca Buitendaeg. I spoke to Steph afterwards. She was frustrated, disappointed. She told me that She had priority on the wave that really clinched it for Buitenzorg. Steph didn't think it was all that good, let it go through. Bianca Buitenzorg took it, and she got over 7 points for that wave, and that was a real clincher for her, taking it well out of Steph's reach. Steph disappointed, upset, but she said, look, she's already planning on how she can qualify for the next Olympic Games because she really wants to represent Australia again. In the team itself, the Irukandjis, as they're known, the mood is high. As you know, all four of our surfers, you know, both men and both women, qualified for today's round three competition. Still got three Aussies to go, so the big hope now resting with Sally Fitzgibbons in the women. And, of course, we've got Julian and Owen in the men.
Mm. Yeah, fingers crossed for all of the Aussies in action. And now, can you give us an idea, Rob, where is Surigasaki Beach?
It's about a 90-minute drive southeast of Tokyo in an area known as Chiba. It's the premier surfing spot here in Japan.
Yeah, right. And now, I know that I personally am very interested in this, and I'm sure our listeners are as well, to get some sort of behind-the-scenes info on what it's like for the media over there. Can you give us an idea, where are you staying in Tokyo?
We're staying in Tokyo. When I was there earlier in the week covering the hockey, media spread out all over Tokyo. But for us, me particularly, I was at a hotel called the Grand Fresa, which is only about a 10-minute walk from the International Broadcast Center, right in the heart of Tokyo. Conditions are very strict because we're in this sort of soft quarantine bubble. All we're allowed to do is go from our hotel to the International Broadcast Center or to the venue that we're supposed to go to that day. Other than that, you know, we're supposed to head straight back to the hotel, eat in the hotel, not leave our hotel for any other reason except to cover events. It's the same here down in Chiba. We're staying at a hotel not far from the water. All we're allowed to do is go to the next door convenience store to get food or come down to the surfing, and then we must go straight back to the hotel. We're tested for the first 4 days here. We have to give a saliva sample, and then every 4 days after that, handed my one in this morning. And we're also supposed to check our temperatures and register that on a Japanese application on our phones every single day just to make sure that we're all healthy.
Wow, that does sound pretty strict. And now people listening might be thinking, oh, geez, how rough is that, having to only eat from Japanese convenience stores? But they might not realise that that's not such a bad thing. They've got some pretty awesome stuff in those stores.
Absolutely. I mean, you get fresh sashimi, fresh sushi, some great noodle dishes in there. Of course, all the coffees and drinks you need are also stocked in there. So it's not just your normal sort of like servo convenience store. It's almost like a mini supermarket in a way.
Yeah, exactly. I can recommend the fried chicken if you happen to pass a family mart or a 7-Eleven over there. You can't go wrong.
Yes, I've been to a couple of family marts, the ones I'm allowed to go to, yeah, and the fried chicken's definitely on the top of the list.
And so what's the outlook like for you then for the rest of the week? Are you going to be at surfing for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, surfing's here till Wednesday, as long as conditions hold out. So then we should know by Wednesday who's taken out the competition, hopefully one of the Aussies. And then I'm back to Tokyo to cover the golf, a bit of swimming and the athletics as well.
Mate, it's exciting. Channel 7 reporter Rob Scott, keep cool over there. And thanks for chatting on the West Live today.
Thanks, Ben.
And now in COVID news, New South Wales has recorded 145 new locally acquired cases of COVID-19 in the 24 hours to 8 p.m. last night. 58 cases were in isolation throughout their infectious period. 25 cases were in isolation for part of their infectious period. But this is the number that everybody's waiting on. 51 cases were infectious out in the community, and the isolation status of a further 11 cases remains under investigation. As we've already spoken about on the show, New South Wales Health has notified there's been two COVID-related deaths, which were announced yesterday. That takes the total to 8 COVID-related deaths in New South Wales during this recent outbreak. There are currently 156 COVID-19 cases admitted to hospital, with 44 people in intensive care, 18 of whom are currently on ventilators. Joining me now in the studio, Channel 7 Sport, Mark Reddings. G'day, Skeet.
Hello, Ben. Those numbers in New South Wales from a sporting perspective, just in brief, means I think more likely than not that the NRL season's going to stay outside of that state for the rest of the 2021 season, and also the AFL having to juggle around with Greater Western Sydney and the Sydney Swans. So that's all in the melting pot. But yeah, we've got, of course, a huge Let's Go Tokyo podcast coming up at midday. But we'll just briefly tease on what we're going to talk about. And obviously the swimming is going to be such an exciting part of today with Ariana Titmus v. Katie Ledecky. And will the Queen Ledecky be dethroned by the Aussie? And can we build on our one goal? That's all to be revealed in the next few hours.
What was your highlight of the opening weekend?
Well, the relay, the gold.
I mean, it was pretty special, wasn't it? Even though it was the most obvious, it was foregone conclusion.
You can talk about every other nuance in Tokyo, but it, from an Australian perspective, world record, three consecutive Olympic golds. Fantastic performance. But yeah, that again, we'll certainly expand on that later on in the podcast. But yeah, that was a magic moment over there in Tokyo.
And of the sports that you don't normally watch week in, week out, any take your fancy?
Well, I've never skateboarded in my life, I'll be honest with you. But that actually had a bit of quirkiness about it. Now, I must admit, I'm not big on 3-on-3 basketball at the Olympics. I don't think it belongs there. Yeah. That's my personal opinion, because I think you've got your basketball there anyway. And that, again, for some is debatable with regards to what's transpired with the professionals coming in and non-professionals. So all that is in the melting pot. Yeah, the skateboarding, I thought, for what it's worth, was worthy of enjoyment. And you know what? Admiration of these athletes that I didn't quite have.
Skills that you look at it and you go, do you know what? I could never do that.
No, not in a million years.
So 3-on-3 basketball. I was so looking forward to 3-on-3 basketball. I have to admit, a little bit disappointed, I think, by the spectacle. And they use a smaller basketball, which is weird in itself. And I reckon that impacts their shooting. Like, the shooting was, for some countries, really pretty average, to be honest with you. And they said in the commentary that they use a smaller ball to, I guess, improve ball handling. But it's fixing a problem that doesn't exist. Who has ever watched professional basketball and thought, oh, geez, if only the ball handling was a bit better? It's not a problem.
I'll tell you what, in brief, before we move on to footy, the ball handling for the United States, the dream team, that's an issue. They've been beaten.
Goodness. Did you watch that last night?
They've been beaten in the warm-up matches when you go, well, that's fair enough. They're just getting themselves in the groove.
Just a bit of a tune-up.
But beaten last night.
They looked very average.
France, Kevin Durant, Damien Lillard, some of the big names, they have got, it's a defeat. It's not the end of the world. But anyway, we will certainly.
Well, first time they've lost since 2004.
True, yes. It's not the end of the tournament, obviously. No. But it's a little wake-up call that they are gettable.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think the basketball competition is going to be very close this year. You'd expect the Dream Team to have that extra gear that maybe we didn't see last night. But, geez, as you say, a wake-up call.
Absolutely. Now, we expect them to finish on the podium, but unfortunately the Fremantle Dockers aren't going to finish anywhere on the podium in 2021.
I didn't watch 1 minute of footy this weekend, so I have no idea what happened. I was only Olympics focused.
Yeah, well, we were complete opposite, because my footy background meant I was doing a lot more football than Olympics. But I can tell you the Dockers yesterday, look, they're still only just outside the eight, but they've got so many banged up bodies. Nat Fyfe set to undergo surgery on his dislocated shoulder.
He's done, right? He's done for the year.
I think it's time to look after his welfare as much as anything. Forget the finals. If they get there, great. If not, then they know they've got a bloke that's going to be fit for next season. So interesting incident yesterday, which the shoulder popped again. It's been a problem for a while now, and he was playing in pain. Michael Walters sideline with a hamstring injury. He might not play again this season, particularly if the Dockers are out of finals contention. So those two players going down did not help their cause. They're up by 17 points against the Sydney Swans on the Gold Coast in David Mundy's 350th. That didn't score after those two injuries. That didn't score for a quarter and a half, essentially. Mm. So Fremantle really fell away, beaten by 40 points. And the most damning stat from that game, I reckon, was Fremantle inside 50 tackle count was 2. So the forward pressure...
For the whole game.
The forward pressure was...
Non-existent.
Absolutely abominable. It was terrible. Wow. So you can make excuses about losing players, but that was a poor performance. Against a good side, mind you, Fremantle, unfortunately, it's 2022, start preparing. Different story for the Eagles. I was there on Saturday, enjoyed the game. Great game of footy, in fact. St Kilda looked gone a couple of times, and the Eagles' midfield started to get a bit more footy involved. So Elliot Yeo, Dom Sheed, Tim Kelly, all getting rolling and playing the sort of footy that we hope they will. That being said, the standout, a guy called Max King, who plays for St Kilda, he kicked 6 goals. He was extraordinary. He kept his side in the game along with Zach Jones. But watching a young forward like him, a bit like Aaron Norton and those around the competition, who take the spectacular marks, kick the big goals, that gives St Kilda supporters a very big level of excitement with regards to what's coming in the next decade from this young man. So without him, the Saints would have been beaten conventionally. What does it mean for the Eagles? Not sure.
Exactly right, because it's their status as contenders this year has, I guess, been a massive question mark against that over the past few weeks. Some big losses, some wins that were maybe not as strong as people expected. This one, what can you take away from it?
Well, they've beaten Adelaide and St Kilda. Both clubs aren't going to play finals this year, so but you're still going to beat them. And they did that. They lost to North Melbourne, who their form has improved significantly. What it does mean, I think they're making up the numbers still, but they're in seventh position. What you do have to bear in mind, Ben, in brief, is that although Victoria, we think, is coming out of lockdown, and they'll probably play finals, at least in Victoria and Queensland, if, for instance, there was a cause to play some finals in Perth, West Coast Eagles become a more dangerous
Say if they meet up against Sydney in the finals, Sydney probably not going to be able to play a home game.
But they won't play it here if it's Sydney's home final, if you know what I mean.
They'll play it anywhere else.
They'll play Geelong if they can. Yeah. So the Eagles, let's be honest, they're the bottom half of the eight. We saw the premiership favourites in action yesterday in Geelong. They were terrific against Richmond. They're a very good side. At this stage, despite the fact that the Bulldogs beat Melbourne to grab top spot, Geelong is the team for me that looks really
good. With a bit of momentum going?
Absolutely. So we're approaching the pointy end. We're round 20. They're still trying to formulate, because of the borders and the corridors and the quarantine, etc., how to get through this, because Richmond's arrived here. They're in quarantine. The Dockers have returned home from the Gold Coast. They're in quarantine. They are just trying to piece this next few weeks together to get to the finals. The AFL deserves massive credit for somehow engineering this, albeit...
They owe Dan Andrews a big pat on the back. If he can get that Victorian outbreak under control and open up restrictions again just in time for footy finals, it's a massive, massive achievement.
Absolutely. New South Wales, it's a horror show.
Yeah.
But in Victoria, talk about turning the tables one state to another, that is looking a little bit more optimistic from an AFL perspective. So that being said, have to mention... a fantastic golfing achievement. We know that Minji Lee has just won her first ever major over there.
Yeah, amazing.
Fantastic. Her brother did it a couple of weeks ago, but didn't win a major. So Minji Lee, Richie Smith is her coach, local WA coach. He must be so proud of what he's done, and the family obviously live, breathe, and eat golf, and that's what the family's done. The brother and sister, I'm not sure who gets first dibs at the dinner table when they come home now, but maybe Minji, because she's won that major over there in France.
Exactly.
That's a fantastic effort. So,
is she going to the Olympics?
She is heading off to Tokyo.
Yep.
Yeah, so talk about... getting the skates on.
Pretty good form.
Absolutely, good form. Mind you, Ash Barty was in pretty good form when she arrived in Tokyo. She's gone. So is Steph Gilmore.
Yeah, did you watch any of that Ash Barty game?
No, I didn't.
See, I did. Like, I started watching the first set and it maybe got to 4-5-3, I think, to the challenger, and I just knew. Like, Barty was so off the boil that I changed to a different sport at that point. Like, you just got the feeling after the high of Wimbledon, it was just one of those days. She was just having a bad day. She's obviously a champion, absolute champion, but, you know, she unforced errors, putting the ball into the net, serving wasn't working for her. It was all coming unstuck.
Absolutely, and you know what?
Hard to watch.
In the vagaries of tennis with regards to you have a bad match, you're gone. At least with basketball and other competitions at the Olympics, you get a chance to reload. Ollie Roux in that position. Matilda's in the same role after losing the weekend.
You reckon they'll give Sam Kerr a chance to kick another penalty?
Oh, of course they will. Jeez, you're a heart. You jump off. They've got the USA next. But I'm not going to waste talking too much about the Olympics, because Let's Go Tokyo, our production team, a huge team of one, is at the back doing all the...
Yeah, exactly. Let's not waste all the good stuff on Westlife. Thanks for nothing, Skeet.
No, but we're just building. I'm just going to go back and mentally prepare for what should be a fantastic episode. So much to get through. And by the time we get to that, we may have a couple of Olympic gold medals in the suitcase as well.
Mate, fantastic. I hope to see that. All right, Skeet, we'll talk to you a bit later on today. Thanks for being on the Westlife.
Thanks, Ben.
The Wild West.
She's back in the studio, Perth Now editor Nat Richards. G'day, Nat.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Yeah, good. Happy Olympics. Are you
happy
ready?
Happy Olympics. I tell you what, I've been massively into it over the weekend. It's probably part of a job description, considering I host a Tokyo Games podcast. But I admit, I was with a lot of people a few months ago thinking, what is this Olympics going to be like with the pandemic hanging over everything, cases of COVID in Tokyo going through the roof? Yeah, I was a little bit of a doubter, I have to be honest, but this first weekend of competition has just been awesome. I've been totally into it.
Loved it. And you know what? I always say I'm Australian for this part of the Olympics. Yeah. And then once we start getting into the track and field, that's when I go full pom.
so you follow the Aussies in the pool where we do pretty good.
Yep.
And then
the pom's on the field.
Yeah, the track. We don't do so good on the track. So you could well have the highest medal tally of anyone.
It's the benefits of being a dual national, Ben.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, you've earned it. You've earned it. And so let's talk about the Australian relay win. They certainly earned all the kudos they got after a world record, Olympic gold medal, just smashed it.
It was everything.
In the 4x100.
It was everything. And they make it look so easy. They're like fishes. They're just gone. Yeah. They left everybody in their wake. It was amazing. But also incredible as well was the reaction from the Canadian team, which came second and beat the US, which they're no doubt very fierce rivals with. And the reaction from them was so sweet. Anybody looking at it and just who hadn't watched the race, seeing the reactions, would think Canada had won. And it was so sweet. They were jumping around, celebrating. There were no salty faces with it being a silver. They were thrilled to bits. And it's gone viral. The footage of them and the pictures of them celebrating. This is what it's like for true sportsmanship to take place in an event like this. It was absolutely gorgeous. And yeah, just really a sweet reaction, really, to come in second.
And it's a reminder, you know, that there's no shame in that. Like, so much focus is put on winning gold, but winning any kind of Olympic medal is so special. We saw a Queenslander win a bronze medal, Brendan Smith, in the pool, and he wasn't expected to win a medal at all, and looked like for the majority of the race that he was probably going to finish fifth or sixth, and then he's come back literally in the last 2 meters
of the
swim. It
was like a racehorse, wasn't he?
Amazing. Just down the home stretch. And I reckon he got it by about one half of his finger, beat the other swimmer for a bronze medal. And you could see he was so stoked. His family back in Noosa was so stoked. And it's just a reminder that these medals are special.
I mean, when you're like second best in the world, that's still pretty damn
nothing
good.
Nothing to snooze at. And in that 4x100 women's, I'm pretty sure every other team in there were thinking, well, silver is basically the equivalent of a gold because there's no way we're going to beat the Aussies.
No, that's it. I mean, they were unbeatable. Looking at them, they were lengths ahead. It was fantastic. So good to watch. It really makes you proud, doesn't it?
Oh, it sure does. And we're talking about it landing on the podium. Plenty of American swimmers landed on the podium over the weekend. And the talking point was not so much about their achievements as it was their unusual face masks.
What is going on there? What is going on? So they wore these face masks. you've seen Dark Knight Rises and Bane. Shadows betray you and all that. They're wearing these masks that they look like they've run into a wall for one, but they've also got the stripes across that make it look like it's a Bane mask. That's what it looks
it
like.
Is very
they were dressed
and
by Bane.
Huge. They're also, these masks are huge. It really covers 3/4 of their face, like almost right to underneath their eyes.
They're big white things. They almost look like those masks that you wear when you're doing home improvements. I don't know who designed them, but they're absolutely awful. The only clue that it's anything to do with the Olympics is that they've got USA
on the side.
Scrolled on the side because it's so American.
I put a poll out to my followers on Instagram to see what they thought these masks look like. We got plenty of suggestions for Bane from Batman.
Yeah.
I got Shredder from the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie. Someone said it looked like a side-on view of a Viennetta dessert. Which, if you look at a Viennetta, that is actually a very good suggestion. Someone said it looked like...
There's someone from a posh family, isn't it, that uses Viennetta references.
I know, or someone stuck in the 80s. And then someone else said it looked like a couple of the characters from the new Mortal Kombat movie, Sub-Zero and Scorpion, which is pretty spot on as well. Someone said it was a Hannibal Lecter mask.
Yes.
It was weird.
I don't know who designed those, whether they're trying to be edgy, or maybe somebody did point out that you can talk a lot easier with those masks on, and that you can breathe a lot easier because there's a bit more room in there.
There's a bit more airspace in there.
But, God, they're not flattering. And the poor, I mean, I felt for the women that had to wear these because they're quite masculine-looking masks as well. They're not flattering at all to anyone.
Well, on the topic of what women are wearing at the Olympics, there's a lot of talk about what the gymnasts are wearing, and that's because of what the German team decided to wear.
Yep, so they've worn these full unitards which cover their legs up, which is something that we have not seen. I mean, normally we see them wearing the leotards that, you know, like
that's sort of a high
on
cut,
the,
yeah, yeah,
undies
like
on
a
the
bikini
bottom. Yeah, and they've said, nah, you know what, we want to be comfortable, and it's sort of a bit of a move for female empowerment as well. We're allowed to wear this, we're going to wear this, and you know what, you're going to judge us on our moves rather than our looks.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fantastic.
Awesome.
And you know what, because no one wants to have to worry about a bikini wax, as well as worrying about everything
falling
else that
off
they've
the
got to do, winning gold medals and all the rest of it.
Exactly.
And fair enough.
And it's such a topical thing in gymnastics as well, talking about the sexualization of the athletes, because we've seen high-profile scandals with sexual abuse and discrimination in that sport. So I think it's very worthy to bring that to the forefront. Here's one for you. So people always talk about the beach volleyball uniforms, right? Like, why do the men get away with singlets and shorts and the women have to wear bikinis, right?
Mm.
Do you know what I learned over the weekend?
Go on.
It's optional.
They don't have to wear a bikini.
They don't have to. So
you know what? If I had a
London.
Body like that and I wanted to wear a bikini, that's the thing, though. It's a choice.
It changed at the London Games. So at London, they brought in the choice for women. They could either wear the bikinis or shorts and singlets. But for whatever reason, most of them don't choose.
You know what? If you want to wear a bikini, hats off to you. If I had a figure like you, I probably would. But also, equally, if you don't want to worry about the bikini wax and want to wear leggings, fair enough. Do it.
I would wear leggings.
Is it needs to be equal and it needs to be a choice and you shouldn't be judgy.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, they're athletes. And I tell you what, I watched the men's gymnastics. Me and my husband watched the men's gymnastics on Saturday night. And he's there to laugh. We're both having a Bailey's. He's there with you know those big Toblerones that you get at Christmas? He's got a big chunk of that and he's nicking that down while we're watching it and he's going, oh, we messed up that dismount. Look at the state of him. Jump, 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 jump. And I said, how many push-ups can you do? He's like, one. I was like, that's it. They make it look so easy. But let's remember that these guys are bloody strong.
That's right. But I think that is the beauty of the Olympics, that us couch potatoes can sit on our butts, watch 2 weeks of the most elite athletes on the planet and give them critiques.
I know, right? I know. We got, oh no.
I was watching
Simone Biles last
watching the
night.
Men's,
oh no, that dismount.
Exactly. I was watching the men's road race after their 230-odd-kilometre ride up the slopes of Mount Fuji, and I was saying, oh, I just cannot believe that guy's not attacking right now. Like, he's got no gas left in the tank, that bloke.
And you find yourself talking like a commentator the more you watch it.
I know.
Oh no, that's not my favourite piece of apparatus.
I'm an expert on 10-metre air rifle now, so there you go. Nat Richards, thank you very much for coming in and bringing us this other side of the Olympics. I hope you do it for the rest of the week.
Yeah. Bring it on.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Speak tomorrow. Ta-ra.
Well, that's it from me. You can download the full show or individual interviews by searching for The West Live wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, if you're loving the games, be sure to download Let's Go Tokyo with myself and Mark Rennings. We'll keep you across everything Olympics. Available, as I said, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The West Live with Ben O'Shea. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on the west.com.au to deliver.